Good afternoon, and welcome to the third annual Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Joe Bolen, Managing Editor of Fundraising Success. I'm pleased to welcome you to another great live session, Acquisition Acumen, sponsored by IBM. Our presenters this afternoon are Cara Marinelli and Brian Terpstra from Strategic Fundraising Strategists, L.W. Robbins. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We won't have time in the session to actually address the questions, but our presenters will answer them later and get back to you with that. So, also, please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all the widgets on your console. To figure out what all the widgets do, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. Lastly, if you leave the session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the FSV on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Monday, October 15th. So let's get to our presentation. Please welcome Brian and Cara here to talk about acquisition.
Hi, everyone. This is Brian. I'm really happy to talk with you today. I wish I could see you all, and I know if I did see you, I hope you guys are smiling. I can't check if you guys are staying awake, but I hope we keep this exciting enough that you do stay awake. So our goal for today is a simple one. I'm going to advance the next slide. Oops, excuse me. So what we'll cover today, our goal today is really a simple one. Cara, hoping that you can walk away from this presentation with at least two or three or maybe four, maybe five ideas that you can use to improve your fundraising program. We really wanted to focus our talk today on three areas that could have a big positive impact on recruiting more new direct marketing donors into your program. And I have worked with over about 20 nonprofits over the course of my career, and I have found that many of these organizations have not really focused on these areas. They don't give them enough attention they deserve, and they can be a great source for high LTV multi-channel donors. So without further ado, what we'll cover today, first, I'm going to talk a little bit about auditing your organization's constituents for warm prospects and then developing some kind of conversion strategy for them. Really ways to turn them into multi-channel direct mail donors. Second, I'm also going to go over using cooperative databases as a great way to reach new universes of potential donors. And then finally, Cara is going to talk a little with us today about your online constituents and are there ways of turning them into new donors as well. Now, we can't go into each of these areas in great detail, but we did want to give you enough information that hopefully you'll get to thinking about ways that you can leverage some of this information for your own program. So first topic that we will be covering is converting warm prospects. And I have this lovely diagram here, and I want to get you to think real big picture for a little while. And try to think about all of the constituents that come in contact with your organization or that you talk with that somehow know who you are but perhaps haven't given a gift. All of these different types of constituents could be a good source or channel for acquiring new direct marketing donors. Every program has some of these constituents. Maybe larger programs even have more that we're showing here. And some of these constituents are really ripe for some kind of long-term direct mail conversion strategy. So some of the circles that are represented here are actually donors. They've actually given a gift, but they've given through some kind of channel that's really not direct marketing, and your kind of challenge is to get them to give to another channel, direct marketing channel, maybe through emails or through offline solicitations. But then a lot of other circles here really represent constituents that you may have given them impression, you may have talked with them or messaged them somehow, but they really haven't given a gift. And these are some of the constituents that you might want to really concentrate on and see if you can get some new donors from them. So I'm going to highlight a couple of them right now. On the upper left is information seekers. There are a lot of people that might be going to your website, might be registering for an e-newsletter, but might not be donors. They're of interest to you. At the top there is social media participants, someone who might be going to your Facebook account if you have one, or following you on Twitter if you do Twitter. Or maybe they were maybe you have some videos up on YouTube and they got interested in you through viewing the YouTube video. Those folks are constituents that you might be interested in. Also, even event participants, and this is on the right-hand side, the right-hand circle. A lot of event participants, and that's a walk or maybe an annual dinner that you have, or maybe a golf event, some local fundraising event. A lot of those may only run once a year. But what do you do for them throughout the year? How do you communicate to them? Can you make them into long-term or multi-channel donors? Then there's constituents that are advocacy. Some of you might ask, be really an organization that does have an advocacy arm. Are you asking people to sign a petition on your website? Are you getting people excited, but they're not necessarily donors yet? That's another good constituent pool. And then you may have a network of volunteers that are constituents that haven't given a gift yet, but might be in a good place for you to try to convert them into direct mail or direct marketing donors. This next slide I have, I just want to show you very specific examples. I'm not going to go through them all, of some of the types of organizations that I've actually worked with and the types of constituents that we've actually worked to really try to help these nonprofits to convert these people into direct marketing donors. And Kara is actually going to give you a case study. The one I will point out is St. LaBrae Indian School. We have a lot of people who sign up and register for the newsletter online. They don't give an online gift yet. And Kara's going to walk through kind of what treatment strategy we get them to see if we can convert them into donors. So what do you want to think about and which warm prospects that you may find in your program do you want to target for conversion? There are a lot of things to think about. I only threw up really the four biggest kind of thoughts I had on this, but you do want to think through a couple of key things before you start a conversion program. One question you want to ask yourself, do you already have long-term strategies in place for a gala event or volunteer or these all types of constituents? If someone goes to a local event or goes to a gala that you might have, do you communicate again to them? How often do you communicate? What is your current strategy? Do you have no real true strategy to keep them giving to you or potentially wanting to give to you? And then also looking at, and I mentioned this earlier, which warm prospect gave a gift to a different channel other than direct marketing, and which one actually took an action but did not give a gift. Your conversion strategy may depend heavily on what the answer to that is. If someone has given you a gift, your real challenge is to see if you can get them to give another different type of give and make them multi-channel donors. If someone's participated in an event but didn't really give a gift to that event, they just went with a friend and you captured their name, can you get them to actually give a gift to your organization? Do you have staff or the resources to carry out a customized communication strategy? And then another thing you want to think about, are you struggling with the ROI for online registrants or online donors? Are you sending out a lot of emails but not seeing a lot of online giving? You may want to think about, well, how do I convert some of those donors into new donors or new multi-channel donors? As we probably all know and always remember, take note, multi-channel donors are typically very high long-term value donors. So it is worth the effort to try to convert them from one channel into multi-channel, or from being a non-donor, someone who took an action with you, into a donor. Now I'm going to go to the next slide. I'm actually going to come back to this slide, so I'm going to actually jump to slide 10. Wanted to talk about if you're going to pursue some kind of conversion strategy for these warm constituents, I recommend really the following strategies. Things that you kind of should do. One thing you should do is it shouldn't be just a one-touch try. You really should try to touch these constituents three or four or five times a year. So if you have three or four acquisitions a year, you might want to include these in, because just one touch may never really get that gift that you're looking for. You may want to send email, offline and online community solicitations to them. But I do know that you have to touch them more than once, certainly, and you have to think about how many times you're going to communicate with them. Co-branding, it always works, if you can, to mention, if I participated in a walk or a local event, it always makes sense in the letter, the solicitation letter, to mention the walk that I participated in. Response rates jump when you can mention that. And along with that, origin source messaging, very similar strategy there. If you can mention the event in the letter, if it has a logo, if the event has a logo, put that logo on there. People do use conversion modeling too, by the way. It's my fourth thought there on the right. And I'm going to go quickly into that in the next slide. But conversion models do work. I'm going to go into prospect modeling in a few minutes, and I'll explain modeling to those of you who might not really be aware of how it works in a little while. So I'll talk a little bit about that. Another thing to develop a good conversion strategy is doing constituent research. And what I mean by constituent research is simply, I'm going to go back to this slide. This really is what constituent research. And what I did is kind of dissected walk constituents, which is a kind of a complex type of constituent. But when you're doing constituent research, you really have to think through audience. You have to think through assumed demographics, you know, who you think these people might be, how old are they, would they, you know, do they use the direct mail channel, type of channels they like to use, and then and look at the challenges of soliciting these folks. What would be the best offer? How many touches? How involved do you think they are in your organization? If they only do one thing with you a year, is that a really heavy involvement? I will tell you one thing, though. I've worked with several major organizations, and it does show that event participants who receive an off-season solicitation retain at higher levels to both the event and to the organization overall. So it has really proven to work. So that was a little bit about constituent research. And then finally, track testing. Another thing we have found that really works, if you have enough constituents to actually conduct a test, to do two different treatments, because as we all know, we're not really sure what would motivate more donors to give over other offers. So you want to see if you can test different offers. And now I am going to talk a little bit about warm prospect models. First, the one thing I want to say is if you're a small organization with very small budgets, there are still a lot of modelers out there that can work with you on a conversion strategy. And typically what a conversion strategy is, they'll take your constituents who that you want to try to convert into a direct mail or a direct marketing donor. They'll profile your current direct marketing folks, develop a profile of them, then look into your constituents pool and try to pinpoint those who might have a very similar profile. And usually you're looking at a value model versus a response model. Value is getting a higher average gift but a lower response, and a response model is usually getting a higher response but a lower average gift. And you have to really weigh the benefits of each of those in these modeling. And some tips, if you do try to convert warm prospects, I've seen conversion rates in the range of 5 to 15% or more, so it runs the gamut. Can be even a 5%, depending on what the constituents are and how much it costs you, could be a very successful conversion strategy. You know, obviously, we hope for the 15%. If you're not truly sure the source of some of these constituents, if you don't have all that coding on your file, I would recommend keeping things really simple, test mailing your typical direct mail prospect package. Keep any copy changes really limited. If you know they might have given a gift or if you know that they might have participated in an event, you would word something like, because you've supported our mission, we are writing to you today. And really, support can mean many different things. Support can mean giving a gift. Support can mean showing up and volunteering at a local fundraising event. So keep it really simple. We did want to walk through a case study with you. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. It's the foundation based, I believe, in New York. And they do have a very active direct marketing program, but they also have a very active walk program. It's called Walk to Cure Diabetes. So what we did is looked at their participants, and we tried to figure out, is there a way we can make these donors multi-channel donors, donors who will give year over year, and really increase the long-term value of them. So we did use a conversion model to target those names we thought would most likely to convert. And the segments, we only chose people who we could actually say gave a gift to the event. Like I said, there are a lot of other participants or volunteers who might not have actually given to the event. So we kept it to people who gave a gift. And what we did is we really tested two different direct mail packages. Co-branded labels was their control prospect package versus a branded letter package. And actually, they both did really well. One offered the branded labels, offered a high response, low average gift, and the cost per dollar raise was almost break even. And the co-branded letter offered a lower response, but a higher average gift, and the cost per dollar raise was almost break even. And really, the heart of the package, it really introduced the concept of talking to the donor and the way that they had given to JDRF. And I'm just going to read the first sentence of the letter. Was very simple, by the way, the letter package. It was just an 8.5 by 11 letter. It's saying, "Dear Mr. Sample, I'm writing to thank you for your generous support you've given to JDRF through our Walk to Cure Diabetes, and I want to ask you to consider helping us again today with a gift at this time." So we're really pleased with the results, and I think that someone could probably leverage a similar strategy for their program. The second area I wanted to mention for getting source of new donors is testing co-op databases. And then you can see my little on fire there. I've worked with a lot of organizations lately and who have been using two or three cooperative databases. It's really hot right now, and they have offered really great response rates. So I want to make sure that you think about that. So we all know the traditional direct marketing program, going out to other charity lists and renting or exchanging those names, have worked well for us. But now there's really a new, a lot of modelers now in the industry who are doing a great job in modeling names, and they're becoming great sources of new donors. Some key facts, the basics. For most cooperatives, the size of the nonprofit organization does not matter. I've seen co-ops work with organizations only have 5,000 active donors up to 15, 20,000, obviously much larger as well. So you need to ask the model company if they'll work with you. I've actually named a few in a couple of slides from now. The nonprofit industry is really late in using these co-op models, so there's a big opportunity. Commercial industry has been using modeling and co-ops for many years. Nonprofits only the past 2 or 3 years, and each model is experiencing tremendous growth. So the sooner that nonprofits get into this and tap into this, the better, because it might mature 3 or 4 years from now. And models are built off a huge number of transactions. That's why they're effective, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. And then there's a large number of companies, like I mentioned, doing modeling. What you should think about if you haven't used cooperative models, you need to think about, number one, your competitors may be already using it, so you may not want to miss the boat. Maybe you need to convince some folks at the home office about kind of what a model is and why you want to use it. You need to familiarize yourself with data protection policies. That's critical for you to understand how they use the donors. Most of the modelers are very protective of the privacy concerns. Participation is usually blind, and detailed consumer information is never shared with other participants. So even though they're modeling off of names, they'll never know that that household actually gave to your organization. They'll know they gave to a charity, and they'll maybe know they gave to a charity in your niche, but they won't know it was exactly your organization. And if you have some truly unique donors, they're of no interest in the co-op. Just remember that if no other participants in the co-op actually have a donor that's unique to you, and that's usually only 8 or 9% of your database, then they're of no interest because you can't really model or profile them. So I've worked personally with these organizations. All of them offer some modeling, and all of them, I've seen models work for all of these organizations. So if you have an interest, contact them and see if it could work out for you. A little note on how cooperative databases work and why they're so powerful. Most co-ops years ago really looked at typical variables, which were charity variables, people giving, those who are donors, people giving gifts, giving gifts to multiple organizations. So you'll look at how many gifts do they give a year, what types of organizations do they give you. You might have had some demographics on who these people were. But now there are four or five very large co-ops in the industry who really have come into the nonprofit industry and really have a huge amount of other variables that they can profile on, which make their models pretty robust. And that could mean catalog transactions, mail order transactions, understanding if the person's a credit card user, what's their dwelling type, what's their age, what's their income, what type of magazine or books are they buying, how many gifts do they give a year? So it would include all the gift transactions too. That's really the power of these co-ops. And I just wanted to do a real quick case study about one organization that I've worked directly with that has used a co-op. This organization is called MAP International, and it's found significant success using models built by a major cooperative to help identify prospects. And what this modeler did and what most modelers do, they looked at responders to past acquisition campaigns. They were identified, and then a model was built to select prospects that have similar characteristics as the responders. We mailed a test panel of these prospect names. They receive our acquisition control package. And on the next slide, I have the acquisition control package that you can kind of look at your leisure. But we really didn't change a thing. We mailed the exact package to these prospects as we would to any other prospect list. And what we found and what we've continued to find, we've actually been using these models for the past 2 years, that the response rate and the average gift from these modeled prospect lists were significantly better than any other prospect list. And we're talking over 1.5% response rate. So for MAP, this was a great source of new potential new donors for their program. All right, now I am going to have Kara talk to us today. Kara is going to go over trying to acquire new donors from digital constituents. She'll give us some thoughts on how to attract people to your website, how to engage them once they get there, and she'll have a case study about converting e-registrants. So without further ado, Kara, take it away.
Hi, everyone. This is Kara. I hope everyone can hear me okay and you're still doing okay and you're with us. So as Brian mentioned, I'm really going to focus on acquiring new donors digitally. The first place you want to start with is optimizing your website. You want to make it easy to bring new donors on board and online. When a constituent comes to your website, you want to make it easy that they can find what they're looking for, especially the donate button. That's the most important thing on your website. A good best practice is you want to separate out major fundraising offers. That way, it just makes it really easy for, once again, the constituent who's going to your website to find the content or the pictures that they're most interested in viewing. For your website, you want to use a tool like Google Analytics. That way that you can continue to analyze and monitor your website metrics. It'll allow you to look and see who's coming to your site. You're going to be able to see what site they came from, what pages they looked at, how long they stayed on. And basically, you'll be able to compile that data and look at the results, and it'll allow you to make any changes that are necessary if need be. If not, then you'll just know that you're doing everything right. Search engine optimization and search engine marketing, these are both important parts to bringing in new traffic to your site. However, it's important to note for many organizations, this does take a lot of time. It's not something you just implement once and kind of let it go. It does take some manipulation and review and analyzing and reviewing it over and over. So most organizations we find they just don't have the resources to devote the attention to it. So a lot of times we will see that organizations are working with consultants or other strategic partners to help with these efforts. Other website suggestions that we have for the folks today are use of light boxes. We've really seen this pop in the last year or so. This isn't something you'd probably want to use all the time. It would kind of wouldn't be as special, but it's definitely something that we've seen successful with our clients for special campaigns or definitely for end of the year. The other thing you want to think about is you want to find ways to make your website interactive, engaging. It's just going to make people want to return and come back. And here are some good examples that we've seen on people's websites. for vision nonprofits. We've seen people do a point of view with people with vision diseases for some Alzheimer's organizations. We've seen them include memory games for schools. We've seen virtual tours of campuses. That's really nice because especially donors are not always able to come and visit the school. And then for colleges, we've seen another good example would be placing videos of the president based on sort of the vision of the overall college. Another thing to really consider that we're seeing a lot of our organizations do is year end is so important for many of our nonprofits. You know, a lot of organizations are raising between 35 and 45% of their overall online revenue just in year end. And you might want to discuss a blackout period with your organization, basically allowing fundraising to, an example might be allowing the fundraising department to really use the month of December to be focused on fundraising, both on not only online communication, but also on the website. That can be a challenge because a lot of times, emails are coming from other departments within your organization, but it's definitely something, it's a really important tip that you might be able to use within your organization. Next, we're going to discuss that once they've kind of come to your website and they've become an online constituent of yours, you need to have a conversion strategy put in place so that you can try to convert them into a donor. And then there's some questions you probably want to ask yourself before putting this plan together. The first thing would be, what does the constituent gain by coming on board? Do they gain anything other than getting emails and asking you to donate? Hopefully there's, you know, education or information or there's something else that you can provide your online constituents. The next thing would be, what do you have to say to them? Once again, hopefully it's something you have stories or anecdotes or information and health tips that you can share with them other than just asking them to donate. Is it an option for you to get the offline address? Does this opportunity exist? If it does, it's a great way to help communicate on multiple channels. And as Brian mentioned, if you can get a donor to communicate and donate on multiple channels, they're going to have a higher long-term value to your organization overall. The other thing is there a reason for the constituent to return? Are you, you want to constantly make sure that you have content that's updated and engaging so that you want to make them come back and engage with your organization. Another thing that you want to consider within your conversion strategy is asking for a gift. Far too often organizations wait too long before asking for a gift and they lose out on that opportunity. So it's definitely something you want to consider with your conversion strategy. And then also you just want to find the right mix of online and offline. And one good strategy is to build a communication schedule. This is really going to provide you the opportunity to plan out. It's going to give you the time necessary to plan out so you're not just kind of flying by the seat of your pants and you're really thinking your strategy through. Other engagement opportunities to consider would be building social media buzz around, you know, large events, milestones, holidays, things that are kind of really happening in your organization. You know, if you kind of put that out there and all your website and all your different social media outlets, it's really going to create a buzz and get your constituents excited. Also, you might want to consider sending messages to online constituents to just really kind of stay top of mind and relevant. Some examples we've seen with Catholic organizations, you might want to consider weekly inspirational messages. For disease organizations, you might want to think about health tips or advice for caregivers or research updates. And for environmental organizations, some examples might be petitions or advocacy updates. Once again, you're just trying to keep your online constituents engaged with you with what you have to share. So as Brian mentioned, we work with an organization, St. Lebrun Indian School, and this is a case study for their online welcome series. St. Lebrun has an online sign-up for email updates on their website, and I will show you that example next. And basically what they do is they offer constituents a premium that entices them to sign up, and it's a drum CD as a back-end thank you to basically encourage signing up online. This is a drum CD, and it's a Native American organization, so this premium ties in really well with their mission, but it also allows them to obtain a way to obtain their offline address. And here is an example of that online sign up. Once again, the other thing to note is this may not be not all organizations may need to offer a back-end premium for online sign-up, but we find that St. Louis donors are they're very premium responsive, so this worked out well because it was mission-oriented and it provided a nice back-end thank you as well. These online constituents who signed up, basically, the people that receive the welcome series, they have no transaction history online with St. Labrie. And the goal, once again, is to really engage and convert them into donors long-term. This is a two-touch campaign. However, I have to say some organizations we have seen have few more touches, typically in the 3 to 5 touch range, but this seems to be working right now, and we'll probably be testing into some additional touches in the future. It's also important to note why the constituent is being emailed the welcome series. They are excluded from other online communications, really focusing on welcoming them and encouraging them to kind of give that gift. And then the other thing is obviously it's important to really look at your results so that you can really see how individuals are responding to the welcome series, just so that you can tweak it or change it if need be. This is the example of St. Labrie's welcome series, their Touch One. Touch One is typically sent within 7 days of the email address coming on file. It includes a personal greeting from the executive director with a nice video, which is really helping open rates and this being successful. It does include a soft ask at the very end, but primarily the letter really focuses on welcoming them into the online family. And there is a campaign-specific donation page that really reinforces the message in the letter. Touch 2 is sent within 14 days of the receipt. Records are excluded if they do make a donation within the last 14 days. Obviously, we would not want to send out a Touch 2 if a constituent did come on file and choose to donate. This email message is a little different. It focuses more on getting the constituent involved, and it does include a hard ask. Once again, it has a hard ask with a back-end thank you gift, which is a polar fleece blanket. This works for St. Labrie, but once again, as I mentioned a little earlier, it's because they are premium responsive and they really loved getting their thank you gifts. Okay, now we're going to move on to social media. If you're new to social media, my best advice is to really start small. You want to focus on one or two social networks first. I think if you kind of dive in and you try to attack them all, I think it's going to be a little overwhelming. Best practices, you want to make sure you're always including links on all your online communications as well as your website. You really just want to advertise and let your constituents know where they can reach you, where you have a presence on which social networks. You also want to build your base by reaching out to your current constituents on file. Once again, you really want them to know where they can find you. Next, you really want to encourage your constituents to engage with you within the social networks. The reason being is that if they're engaging with you, this helps advertise to their social groups and their friends and family, which hopefully extends your reach within your organization. So it's really great for you to engage with them because everybody will be able to see who they're engaging with. The other thing you want to do is you want to encourage your constituents and donors to retweet your content. This will help introduce followers to your organization, once again, very similar to the point we just made. And you want to regularly post content on Facebook and YouTube regularly, once again, keeping content fresh and exciting and new, which kind of goes into the next point. It's really important to keep that content fresh and new, especially because if you have prospects that are, you know, kind of checking you out, you want to keep them interested. Another site that I kind of came upon late this summer, early fall, is it's a site outside of traditional social networks. It's Giving Library. And I thought this was a great site because it's really it's not part of Facebook or Twitter. It's really something different, and where it's a site where it has a place where all philanthropics could go and visit, and they can check out videos of many different nonprofits using a video library. So the nonprofits have taken a video of themselves, and it's one comprehensive place where you have all different videos about all different organizations. So it's a great place. It's kind of like a giving library. Next, we're going to move on to search and display ads. These really help with visibility to your organization out in the internet. So some traditional online search and display ads that we've, you know, that are out there, you can do ads based on browsing history. You can do ads based on keywords. You can do ads based on, or you can do, yeah, you can do ads based on, you know, where you know that constituents are coming in from, you know, popular sites that they're visiting. And then other things that are new would be inferred or direct ads to prospects. And we're going to get in a little bit about that in a minute. Other places you can do ads and that you've probably seen, so something that you want to consider and think about is Facebook ads and banner ads, and then also ads with Google and Yahoo ad search. Basically, you want to think about when you're planning your ads, you might want to look at your communication schedule and see where it's most appropriate, because sometimes you may want to have a lot of ads and other times you might want to scale back on your budget and what you want to spend. But it's really important to think about your ad campaigns around special campaigns or definitely around top fundraising months like year-end. And then other things you want to consider when you're thinking about your ads would be you'd want them to have the language be more call to action versus donations for the ads, because once again, these are, you're just kind of really trying to get people to be engaged. And then the other thing you want to think about is if they do click on it, you want to have a special landing page for prospects. Next, we want to talk about one-to-one targeted advertising. This is what I was mentioning a little bit earlier on the previous slide. This is something that's relatively new to the nonprofit market. It's basically taking and displaying online advertising to your prospect list. So it's using cookies to synchronize the delivery of online advertising with your offline marketing channels. So you receive an offline piece, and it's kind of targeting online ads based on that delivery. Once again, this is something that's relatively new, and I have seen it successful, but mostly with larger organizations, just due to price and having the volume that's needed to really kind of make this successful. Some strategic partners that, if you are interested in this, that we've seen have some success would be the Blackbaud with the Connection 360 product, and then ALC, their Footprint D3. Next, another idea that we wanted to present to you guys was online donor recruitment. And these are organizations such as Care2 and Change.org. These are two organizations that are working with nonprofits in this space right now. These companies, if you don't know a lot about them, they have large databases of online philanthropic constituents. And basically what they do for the nonprofits is they help nonprofits by sending email alerts to targeted members. They have millions and millions and millions of philanthropic constituents. And really what they do is they target them based on your organization and who might be aligned with your cause, and they urge them to click or take an action. And this can be done through a petition, a pledge, a survey, a poll, a quiz, whatever really makes sense for your organization and the offer that you're trying to promote. And once that's done, really the nonprofit then gets a list of warm prospects, people who were interested in your offer and that are warm to your organization. So they voluntarily subscribe to your email list. And then you're able to kind of take these names and then fold them into your program. It's basically another way that you can really reach out and build brand awareness, especially if you're not one of the big organizations and, you know, you need assistance with that. The one thing to point out that we're working with our clients on that are doing this is that you need to think about a conversion strategy. If these names come on board, you really, as we've been talking about today, you really want to use some of these tools and these tricks that we've been talking about to really get them from being a lead to being a donor. Typically, these programs are the pricing models based on a cost per lead. So you kind of figure out really what you can afford, and most likely they'll be able to kind of work with you based on your budget. Robin's here. We just actually completed a recent Care2 program for one of our international relief organizations, and they were able to, we were able to pick up another 4,000 new email addresses, which is really great for this organization because they were really just kind of starting with their online program, and it'll be great to have these names, especially as we head into the end of the year. Another option that you can think of with these organizations would be paid impressions with a hard ask. So as I was describing to you before, it was more so this was just trying to get them to engage with you and take an action. But there's another option where you can really – you can send out a communication and it has an hard ask. So instead of just getting a lead, you're actually getting a donor. This works really well for some large – this works well with large organizations, typically in an emergency situation, but it's something to think about as you continue to grow your program. So that is I'm actually going to say thank you to you all for your listening skills, and I'm going to pass it over to Brian, and he's going to close us up. 1 second.
Hello again. Just wanted to thank everyone once again for joining us, and thank you, Kara, for a great presentation. And I wanted to just reemphasize, please, if you have any specific questions, please email to Kara or myself. We'll be happy to answer any specific questions offline. And I'm hoping that today you can really take away, you know, really some innovative different ways of attracting more new donors to your program. Either looking at constituents that might be built in, people talking to you already, and figuring out how to convert to them, or using the big, large cooperative databases as a new universe to reach out and get new potential donors, or as Kara did, really developing online constituents so that you can turn them into advocates or turn them into new direct marketing donors. So we hope some of these things that were presented to you today gave you some great ideas, and if you really can take away two or three ideas and put them in practice, then I think Kara and I will be very happy about that. And that's really it for today.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. Thank you, Kara. On behalf of Fundraising Success Magazine and IBM, I want to thank you again for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. And remember, all the sessions today are CFRE credit approved, so make sure to fill out the CFRE tracker document required to apply for credit for this session, which can be downloaded via the resource widget on your console. Please also check out the agenda for, you know, the remainder of the day. We have the closing keynote coming up, as well as some on-demand sessions, which will begin on Monday. We encourage you to view as many of them as you can. Have a great evening, everyone.